for our city. This is the FC Buffalo Show on 91.3 FM, WBNY. Now, from the WBNY studio, here are your hosts, Ben Tsujimoto and Nick Mandola.
What's up? It's Ben Tsujimoto from the Buffalo News Soccer Blog here on the Football Club of Buffalo Show. Joined behind the glass, as usual, by Derek Kramer. The show would not go on without him here.
Oh, thank you.
No Nick Mandola today, though he will be joining us a little bit later on, quite a bit later on, at 5:45.
So he's going to be a guest on his own show again?
Yes, for I believe the third time now. Yep, absolutely. But it'll be good to hear from him. We'll have him to talk about Leicester and Newcastle, which is going on as we speak right now. We'll also have a guest in a little while, our first guest, PJ Gondek, who's the head coach of the Fredonia men's soccer team. He'll be talking about an event going on at Fredonia this weekend. At the turn of the hour, after the break at 5:30, we'll have Michael Schieber of the BDSL. He's the co-vice president of the league, and he'll be talking about another thing going on Sunday. So very diverse guests in terms of where they come from and what they'll be talking about. So you'll learn a little bit of stuff from all over the place in the soccer world in Western New York.
And you get me scrambling on the phones today.
And you get to, yeah, we're really making Derek earn his money today. So we're excited. We usually kind of, you know, don't make it too hard on him, but today, watch out, Derek.
Oh, I'm on it.
All right, great. So for the first little while, I want to talk about what's going on in the wider world of soccer. And I suppose the big announcement today was the FA Cup semifinals being drawn. And it's not fully confirmed yet because there has to be a replay between Manchester United and West Ham. After that 1-1 draw the other day, Anthony Martial scoring for Manchester United to level after a Dimitri Payet free kick that was absolutely brilliant. But the winner of that match will play Everton, and there's no date set for that until after the United-West Ham result. So the winner of United and West Ham will go on to play Everton, and in the other semifinal we'll have Crystal Palace and Watford. That match, if you would have asked me last year, I wouldn't have known what you're talking about because of Watford. But this year it's actually a really interesting game to see. Crystal Palace and Watford, both overachieving teams, playing a more exciting brand of soccer than you might expect. Crystal Palace gets goals from a lot of different places. Watford, Troy Deeney, and Odion Ighalo up top are two guys who a lot of fun to watch, just a lot of pace, finishing ability, tenacity, really what you're looking for in a pair of strikers, especially on a newly promoted club. Also, Thursday, it's just a really big week of soccer. And the first one I think that a lot of local EPL fans are looking at is Manchester United against Liverpool, and this is in the Europa League on Thursday at 4:05. Liverpool had a pretty easy go of it in the first leg, a 2-0 win over the Red Devils. Daniel Sturridge and Roberto Firmino bagging the goals for Jurgen Klopp's side. Manchester United is in a tough spot right now, and I realize they're in a bunch of different tournaments, you know, still alive in the FA Cup, still alive in Europa, and, you know, fighting for a place in the league itself. But it doesn't seem like the atmosphere at Old Trafford has been good at all this year. And you'd think this team was in Chelsea's spot, you know, like sort of in the low teens and struggling, but they're not, you know, they're not having that poor of a year, just being alive in so many different competitions and still being in the race, albeit maybe on the outside a little bit for the Champions League. Or in the top four is, I guess, what I'm saying. But, I mean, Louis van Gaal seems like he's been on the hot seat every single week. The booing of, or the clapping, I guess, of when Marouane Fellaini was subbed off just last weekend, or last week. It's really just a bit of a circus there, and we'll see how much actual change will happen this offseason, and I suspect it'll be a lot. But it just seems like an organization and a fan base that's very, very hard to please. Not only do you have to win, and not only do you have to stay alive in the various competitions, and there are usually several, but you have to play an exciting brand of soccer, and you have to have all the pieces clicking. And maybe it's just me, but it seems like United is always on the wrong end of a lot of injury bugs. They're not quite at Arsenal's level, but they're pretty close. And one of those injuries is popped up at a bad time, Wayne Rooney, and his knee injury will put him out of the second leg of this Europa league clash against Liverpool on Thursday. So United, even though they've dealt without Rooney before, it's not easy when he's your longest standing player, who's now somehow a voice of reason and a voice of calm and a really young team. So playing without him, will it make a huge difference? Will United be able to come back from a 2-0 hole? Right now I'm saying probably not, but you know, I mean, you can't rule them out. There's still some talent there. Martial, back from injury, is starting to click again. Juan Mata, a dangerous player when he's not getting red cards. And so, I mean, don't rule United out, but don't expect them to advance, though. This is the round of 16. A Liverpool result would get them into the Elite Eight of Europa, which would be a good achievement for Liverpool. This is they're still taking this competition seriously as they're, you know, fighting tooth and nail to try to get in the top four as well in league. So they're trying to get into the Champions League one way or another. So we'll see how they fare. Another, in terms of England at least, Europa League match of interest is Tottenham against Borussia Dortmund. And I feel like the Spurs have already kind of thrown in the towel on this one. They started largely a B-side in the first match against Dortmund, losing 3-0, Marco Reus scoring twice. Marco Reus, if you get a chance to watch him, and I would like to watch him more, is just a brilliant player, and he's young, he's German, he's a good finisher, exciting, and I think Spurs, while it's a pretty good mark for them to have made it to the round of the 16, they're going to really focus their efforts on winning the Premier League title this year. And if you're unfamiliar with the setup, the winner of the Europa League automatically gets into the Champions League, but since Spurs are sitting comfortably within the top four, I'd say, and are in a real fight for, I guess, against Leicester to overcome them in the EPL, it makes sense for them to drop out of the Europa League. So I don't expect them to, you know, score three goals against Dortmund in this return leg. I was able to watch Spurs too this weekend. I saw 50-ish minutes of Spurs against Villa, and while trying to watch, I guess, Spurs and take in the Harry Kane and Dele Alli and, you know, guys I've probably seen a lot of, I was really amazed at how bad Aston Villa is. And, you know, when you're this far into the season, simple things like just organization and just poise on the ball have seemed to, you know, totally elude Aston Villa. And I don't really get it. This is a team with a lot of a pride, a club that's been up in the Premier League for a long time, and it's really, it's sad to see them, you know, really just implode. And they're, you know, without a doubt, barring some kind of a minor miracle, going down to the Championship next year. But hard to watch, and it's too bad for a club of that pedigree. But I mean, hey, now is your chance to work your way back up again, retool heavily, and end up back in the Premier League in, I guess, what would that be, 2018. Also, in Champions League, coming up Tuesday and Wednesday, this is the return legs, and they are very entertaining at that. On Tuesday, that's tomorrow, we have Atletico and PSV Eindhoven. Right now, the head-to-head is scoreless, and the return leg is in Madrid. So Atletico, Diego Simeone, and our friend Fernando Torres have a good chance to advance past PSV, having the home field advantage will make a difference, and I think, honestly, Atletico is a better club. Also, Manchester City and Dynamo Kiev, or Dynamo Kiev, as some may say. City up 3-1 aggregate there, and they're playing at the Etihad, so I don't foresee City having any problems. I know it's still Pellegrini there, and he's holding on as a lame duck of sorts, but honestly, it's crazy to see Manchester City this far along in the Champions League. Their next round will not nearly be as, I guess, comfortable as playing against Dynamo Kiev, but you can only play the match that's in front of you, and I think City will do a lot to have, you know, just made it this far. It's pretty good for their resume. On Wednesday, though, really the two marquee matchups, Barcelona in Camp Nou against Arsenal, Barcelona holding a 2-0 advantage. And Barcelona, always fun to watch, and you know there's a really strong contingent of Arsenal fans in Buffalo. So I think there'll be a lot of attention paid to this match. And Arsenal still continually getting bitten by the injury bug. I believe it was Aaron Ramsey who went down the other day. So who knows? I mean, you don't know who will pop up in the starting 11. I saw, is it McElhinney who was playing a holding center mid and doing a very good job of it. So Arsenal, while bitten by the injury bug, is still has the tools in their academy, guys who are fighting for first team duty. Are they going to be good enough to handle Barcelona? I don't know. Probably not. So I expect Barcelona to advance there. And the other match, Bayern Munich and Juventus, that one's at 2-2 right now. The return leg is in Munich, and I don't see Pep Guardiola's team losing here. That 2-2 in Juventus, while it could have been more comfortable for Bayern, Juve fought back in that one. I don't see Bayern going down in Munich. And so, I mean, we're setting ourselves up for a pretty entertaining close to the Champions League. There are a lot of teams that are vying to take down Barcelona, as we've discussed in previous shows. Barcelona, absolutely the favorite. So you could argue maybe three of the best players in the world, if you don't count Ronaldo, with Messi, Neymar, and Suarez. So Barcelona, the favorite. Maybe Arsenal can, you know, at least make it a little scary for them coming up on Wednesday. Before we get to our first guest, PJ Gondek, who will be with us on the phone shortly, I want to mention just a little bit about the MLS match yesterday that was televised, New York City FC in Toronto. Marquee players all over the pitch in that one. Ended 2-2. Sebastian Giovinco scored the game tying goal after David Villa scored twice in the first half, one of which was handball aided. One amusing stat from that game, Andrea Pirlo, you can look at a couple different places that keep soccer advanced stats, but Pirlo credited with either 6, 7, or 8 tackles. And if it was 7 or 8, those are the most tackles that he's successfully completed in one match over the last 7 seasons. So a guy who is known as a finesse player was really getting stuck in yesterday against Toronto. Another interesting note, Patrick Vieira, the New York City FC first-year manager, played a 3-6-1 in terms of the formation, which is also unheard of, and really flummoxed Craig Vanney and Michael Bradley to the point where they had to have a little discussion during the game and, like, how are we going to adjust to 6 midfielders, you know, because there were 3 attackers in the center mid, Thomas McNamara, Mix Diskerud, and Kyrie Shelton, I believe. And there was just too much for the Toronto holding mids to deal with, which played a role in David Villa's brace early on. Giovinco being Giovinco, though, managed to get on the end of a free kick, or actually curl in a free kick that was tapped in towards the end of the first half, and then he scored in the second half for a 2-2 result. Now we have our first guest on the line. That's PJ Gondek, head coach of the Fredonia men's soccer team. PJ, are you with us?
I am here, Ben. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much for joining us. It's good to have you on. You've been at the helm of Fredonia for, is it 14 years now, or is it 15?
It's actually 16.
16. Oh, man, my math is lacking, you could say.
Yeah.
I wanted to have you on to talk about a tournament that you are hosting at Fredonia this Sunday. So I guess just fill us in on what's happening.
Well, Sunday is our annual high school indoor tournament. And over the years, it's kind of evolved a little bit into what now is rather than an indoor soccer tournament, it's a futsal tournament. We played with a futsal ball. The surface that we play on is in our field house, and it's actually kind of like an older kind of rubber surface. It has a little bit of give to it, but when you put a regular soccer ball on a surface like that, mm-hmm. you just get a lot of bouncy balls, and it's just very difficult to control the ball. So we've moved to the futsal variety, and I think it's going to work out well, and it's going to add to our not only our interest in the tournament, but the level of play.
How many schools are involved? This is a high school tournament, right? So it's
inviting
schools.
Yes, it's a high school thing, which is a little different, obviously, because you know most of our top players are right into their club seasons and things. But what you'll find is some of the high school coaches would try to keep their high school kids together, even though they probably some of them are spread out amongst the club teams. Mm-hmm. But right now we've got 12 teams. There's some obviously some local teams. Down in my area, there is a couple of teams from Pennsylvania, and then some of the schools that you would certainly recognize would be IPREP has a team, Riverside has 2 teams, and I believe St. Joe's is another team. They have come perennially to our tournament their coach, Mike Thorne, both of his sons played for me. So there's a pretty good connection there. Actually, the sister actually plays for our women's team. So they always come. And like I said, we got a few teams from down this area. So I've got to be honest, it's a little bit down. And I realize why. It's because of the, you know, the calendar just falls a little bit different this year. And there's a lot of kids on vacation. I mean, this particular tournament, we've had as many as 24 teams.
Wow.
But it kind of varies anywhere from 12 to 24. But it'll be a nice day.
Is there a team that, you know, comes back and wins a lot? Is there a defending champion that you can
point to? Yeah, it's actually Riverside. They've won the last couple of years. Everything about the tournament really favors them because as I'm sure you probably know, they have a foreign-born population that they have players who are usually really good with the ball, and they get in that arena, so to speak, and it's hard to get the ball from them. So they are the reigning champs, and they're bringing two teams rather than one. So I had some of their players, I believe their captain, I believe his name's Pa Lu, was sending me text messages just after his high school season about when this tournament was going to be. So they're pretty pumped.
That's great. Yeah, Pa Lu plays for IPrep. I think he's going to be a senior next year. He's a pretty special player. He led IPrep to, I believe it was the Class D state championship. I think it was not this past fall, but the fall before that. So yeah, it seems like there's a lot of talent heading down there to Fredonia. I want to talk a little bit more. Actually, one question before I ask you the next one. What's the time and location of it if somebody wanted to head down and check it out?
If somebody wanted to head down, they would be right in Steel Hall, which basically is the building that we have our, if anybody's been to Fredonia before, we have our pool, our ice rink, and then our field house in it. It's really adjacent to our soccer facilities, outdoor soccer facilities. It's going to be running pretty much the whole day. In the past, you know, we'll kick off the first game at 8, and a lot of times, you know, we don't really wrap up until about the championship game doesn't go off until around 6 o'clock. So we'll be pretty much there the whole day, and the place will have a lot of fans. There's kind of like an upper deck type of area that fans sit and watch, and they can look down on the field. So it kind of creates for just a very interesting atmosphere.
And I'm sure there's a certain level of intensity too. I mean, especially if, you know, the two Riverside teams match up, or, you know, there's Riverside and IPrep play against each other. I'm sure there's, it may be the off season, but it's never the off season when you play each other, right?
No, it's not. And, we've had some very intense games. There were some times that I wish, my assistant coach, Kendall McFadden and I were not doing the refereeing because we need some more qualified referees because it does get pretty intense.
Kendall's a previous guest on the show at an earlier date, and he I could see him taking some flack from people as well.
So. Yeah.
So it seems like the game of futsal is, I don't know if it's a renaissance exactly or if it's really just beginning to catch on now in the United States. I know Mark Cuban is and a bunch of other people are coming together with this league, and it seems like right now it's going to start out in bigger markets. But what do you think it is about the appeal of futsal to people in the U.S. now, to soccer players in the U.S. now, rather than maybe previous years?
Well, I, you know, the thing I see a lot, and it may be something because I'm, you know, familiar with social media and Twitter and things, and you see a lot of trickery and things with the ball. You see a lot of like what they call like freestyle dribblers and things, which really the start of that, at least the first I ever saw of it was really the Brazilians when they had the Nike commercial, and I couldn't even tell you how long ago, but I, you know, it was Ronaldinho was a big, a big star in those commercials, and I think that's kind of where it started, and now I think it's just kind of prevalent in the U.S. because again, there's so much kind of skill involved in it. It's almost evolved in kind of like a playground basketball type of thing, at least from what you see on social media. So I got to believe that has something to do with it. Whether it's it can really take flight in a professional league. Who am I to say no? I mean, yeah. The way I look at it, the more soccer that's on television or events to go to, the better off.
This is PJ Gondek we're talking to. He's the Fredonia men's head coach. PJ, so just going back over futsal again, it's a weighted ball. It's a smaller ball, right? Is it a size 4? Is it a size 3-ish?
It is a smaller ball. I would say I think it's the size of a 4. Mm-hmm. And when you had contacted me about this, I just sent a quick message to my SID, my sports information director, here at the college, and his first question back to me was, what the heck is a futsal tournament?
Yeah,
and that's literally what I said to him. I said it's basically a smaller soccer ball that doesn't have a lot of it has a little bit more weight to it, and it just creates for a lot less bounce. I think it takes a little bit of getting used to. Mm-hmm. I've got my first spring practice tonight with my guys. We'll be out on the turf with our regular soccer balls. But then tomorrow morning we'll be in that same facility that we have the tournament in, and we'll bring out the futsal balls. So it'll take a little bit of getting used to, because it really has a different feel to it. It doesn't lend itself to a great deal of aerial balls, especially long aerial balls. It's really a different game. And like I said, it does take a little bit of getting used to.
Salem Sports Park, when I was growing up, had a futsal league. I was probably like 11 or 12. And some of my memories from that is it really improves your touch, and it forces, you know, pretty quick decision-making in tight spaces. But I also remember blocking some shots, and it's not easy to hit a futsal ball well, but if you do and you're on the other end of it, it's not a very pleasant experience. Looking back, I remember sort of being aching and getting hit by a lacrosse ball.
I can imagine, and being hit by a lacrosse ball before, I don't want to get hit like that with any other sort of ball, but I can definitely see that. It is not easy to really strike it well. But we do see, like, you know, our college guys, you know, they have a little bit more experience and they're a little bit better ball strikers. Like you said, when they do strike it, it can really be a little bit of a dangerous weapon.
Mm-hmm. So I guess a final couple questions then before we head into our break. Anything from the Fredonia offseason that you want to talk about? I saw you guys recruited a keeper after going through, 4 or 5 different keepers last year.
Yeah, I've told this story so many times, people are probably a little bit sick of hearing it, but we ended up with 6 different players in goal. 3 players were field players, and one was kind of a half field player, goalkeeper. So that was our biggest thing that we needed to address, to kind of get things back on track. So we have a goalkeeper that's coming in from Indiana, and junior college goalkeeper, and we've got one of our goalkeepers back that probably was our most effective last year. So I think we're going to be okay in that area, although I would have thought last year 3 would have been enough. So so hopefully we don't get into that same old thing. But, yeah, we've got some I think we've got some good kids coming in, and just looking to kind of see where we're at in the fall, and really, really need to kind of have a big, do a big 180 here heading into the fall of 2016.
For local soccer fans who might be listening, the one cool thing about Fredonia is the men's program, and I think the women's program too, does a good job of drawing from Section 6 talent. So a lot of guys who you'll see, you know, maybe playing at East Aurora or Hamburg or, other schools nearby tend, in a lot of cases, to make the trek down and end up playing at Fredonia. So it's a good way to have that connection between guys who start in high school to guys who are, you know, make the next step to the college level and play over at Fredonia.
Yeah, we do have that connection on the men's and the women's side. Our school in general, our largest population comes from Erie County, and our second largest population comes from Monroe County. So, you know, most of our players are coming within 2 hours of us. And it's nice, the parents are close. They come down, we've got the lights and the natural grass field, which is real nice. And it's a great place to play soccer. So we're excited, and we're very hopeful for a big 2016.
PJ, thank you very much for joining us. It's been good to have you for your first time on the show, and would encourage fans to check out on Sunday, sometime during the day between, you know, 8 and 6-ish, to head down to Fredonia and watch some futsal and high school West New York players going at it. So, PJ, thank you again for joining us, and we'll take a break here on the Football Club of Buffalo show. We are back on the Football Club of Buffalo show, or Buffalo show. This is Ben Sugimoto.
Good old Buffalo.
Buffalo, yeah. It's I'm just trying to get my Buffalo E sound, or A sound, I should say. Sort of like eggs. Derek Kramer behind the board, Quebec Nordiques hat on today. I think you have all of the throwback hats.
No, it's just this one. Oh. I'm sad that I don't have others.
You didn't have a Hartford Whalers one?
No, actually, the story behind the hat was I was initially looking for a Hartford Whalers one. And then I wound up on the Nordic A's.
Fair enough. I have fond memories of the Nordiques. Anyhow, back to our soccer topic. We will have a couple guests still remaining on the show. Michael Schieber from the Buffalo District Soccer League will join us in just a couple minutes. And we'll also have Nick Mandola, the usual co-host on this show, joining us to talk about Leicester and Newcastle. He's been on the job today for Pro Soccer Talk and NBC Sports. So we'll look forward to hearing from him. We're sure he'll have plenty of reasons to mourn Newcastle, although I don't know what the score is right now, so I'll have to, I guess all of us will be, you know, learning something from that game recap. But I want to preface this this next guest, Michael Schieber, by talking about the BDSL. What the BDSL is it's a local amateur men's soccer league in Buffalo, and it comprises, I believe, 5 divisions now: a premier, championship, first division, second division, and third division. I happen to be on a second division team.
Is that like the upper echelon right there? Is there only one step ahead of that, or is
no,
that
the, no? There's actually 3 steps ahead of that. But I'm sort of in the twilight of my career, producer Derek. So it's all right. But yeah, so. It's the Amateur Men's Soccer League, and it's really started to hit its stride in West New York. There are social media accounts for, I think, over 50 of the teams, which is pretty wild. And I guess right now we got Michael Schieber on the line. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Ben. How's it going?
Doing pretty well. I'm excited to talk about what's happening with the BDSL, and it seems like we're in a new era for the league. And I was just talking about, in prefacing this, about how much social media interest, just how much activity there is in the Buffalo District Soccer League. So the first question I want to ask you is, what's going on Sunday at Salins?
Sure. So this Sunday, the BDSL is participating in its first ever USASA Region 1 tournament. This weekend is a qualifier between a team from our league, the BDSL, and a team from the Rochester League, the RDSL, aptly named. And this Sunday will determine the Western New York Soccer Association representative for that Region 1 tournament.
And the two teams that are playing against each other are?
BSC Raiders will represent the BDSL. They are the league's defending Premier League champs back-to-back from last year and in 2015. And from the RDSL, it's a team called, oh, God, their name is so long. It's,
the Italian-Americans.
The Italian-Americans. There's some SC Bakshi FC in it. I apologize to them, but it's a long name. We'll shorten it to the Italian-Americans for argument.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. So is it 5 o'clock Sunday at Salem Sports Park?
That's right, 5 o'clock Sunday.
Okay. So I want to ask you first how this all came about, because Rochester, the RDSL, has been involved in tournaments like this for quite a while, but this is the first year where the BDSL is able to get involved and be able to play a play-in game like this. So what was the process? How did you desire, or like what made you help push the BDSL into these kind of tournaments?
Sure. That question, Ben, is a long answer one. But I think you talking about the social media presence and the rise of kind of the BDSL, so to speak, is really what pushed it. Over the past couple of years, our league has expanded tremendously. I mean, we're at 65 total teams, which I think maybe, 5 years ago, we had maybe half that, maybe a little bit more. So over 20 teams plus have joined the league since then. And with that, the competition level has certainly gone up. And I mean, you can kind of see that in the area with the growth of soccer as a whole. It's much more popular. So I think who I would give the most credit to is really like the teams themselves of the league for kind of pushing themselves to continue to grow. And because of that, the board had to react and find new avenues to, I guess I'll say, test ourselves, because, I mean, we know what we can do in the Buffalo area. The next logical step, I guess, for me would be to expand that, RDSL, Region 1. Those were all the next logical steps. So that was kind of the inspiration behind it, was seeing just how good we are versus the other regions, and seeing, you know, where Buffalo soccer stood, at least in Region 1 here.
So in order to get into these, the BDSL had to become an elite amateur league. Is that correct?
You know, that's what I thought at first. And when I was researching these tournaments, the information was a little vague on, like, what exactly you needed to do.
Okay.
The elite designation that we received this year, which was also fantastic, it isn't 100% necessary, but almost all of the teams who participate in these tournaments, especially the ones that go far, are recognized as such. And really the designation is just an acknowledgement of the league as a whole, its growth, its impact, its longevity, which we all had as qualifiers for that, obviously, because we got it. But it's not like a necessary thing, I guess, what I found out, but it's more of like another honor bestowed upon our league. It pushed our Premier League up a theoretical rung on the U.S. soccer pyramid. I mean, others can debate how that rung or how that ladder works, but that is where we moved up one with our Premier League. So it's not 100% necessary, but it was like another acknowledgement to the growth of not only our league, but soccer as a whole in Buffalo.
And it sounds pretty cool to be called elite in anything at all.
It doesn't hurt, that's for sure.
So the BSC Raiders playing against the RDSL, the Italian Americans, and you can go check out on bdsl.org. You can see the rosters. You can see, go back over the details for when and where the game is and so forth. That's all on bdsl.org. But looking through the rosters, I think FC Buffalo fans will be interested to know that there are a lot of players who've either been trialists for FC Buffalo, played on FC Buffalo, and this is not just for the BSC Raiders from the BDSL, but also for the Italian Americans as well, as there's a connection there. But who are some of the names that, when you look down these rosters, guys who FC Buffalo fans would be familiar with?
I mean, if you're a fan of FC Buffalo, you're going to get your fill of players. The Chris Walter will be there. I believe Ian Mort is set to play. Kendall McFadden, John Grabowski, they all kind of litter the BSC Raiders roster. I apologize if I'm missing any. I believe I got most of them. The Rochester team, like you said, they have two guys, I'm pretty sure. Jake Schindler was a FC Buffalo guy. Mm-hmm. And last year, I believe, you're going to have to help me with the name here, Ben.
Gwes Obongwasi, which
is why you are the voice of the FC Buffalo. So.
Well, Michael, it took me quite a while to, as the play-by-play announcer, there was no excuse for me to get it wrong. I'm pretty sure I got it wrong. It was almost as bad as when I pronounced Cicerone for like three games.
I would be impressed if you got it right on the first time. I'm someone who loves following the international leagues, and I pride myself on proper pronunciation.
And
but
it's tough.
I never would have got that right.
Yeah, and the funny thing about pronunciation too is that I find myself on this show, you know, debating, because when you say it out loud, it's even going to be different than when you hear it, you know? Like, I caught myself saying David Villa, and I was just like, you shake your head, and you're like, what am I saying? But, you know, sometimes it's just, it's not easy. Sometimes commentators will say it multiple ways, you know? So, I mean, I kind of give myself mulligans time and time again, but
there's even easy ones that, like, you would never think. The one that sticks out in my head for some reason is, like, back when I was playing FIFA 06, Luke Chadwick, and just the way the guy pronounced it every time, it just made me laugh. So with international soccer, you never know how a name is going to be pronounced.
So there's, you know, things to come beyond just this RDSL-BDSL game this upcoming Sunday. So there's potential two more games in April that are happening. Can you explain what is going to be set up with those?
Sure. Well, one is not a potential one. The other one is, obviously, if the BDSL beats the RDSL team, they'll be the region or the Western New York Soccer Association rep in what's called the U.S. Amateur Cup.
Okay.
So they'll then face off right again on April 3rd, which we also drew a home date for. So a team will have to travel to Western New York here to play the Raiders again. If they advance, that team would be, I believe, from Eastern Pennsylvania. It's not to be, or it hasn't been named just yet, as far as I know. But if RDSL wins, they'll have to travel to to Rochester area too. So one way or the other, a Western New York team will be facing a team from Eastern Pennsylvania in this tournament. And the second event that you're talking about is there are two tournaments. So there's the U.S. Amateur Cup, which is now just it's kind of strange. Now it's just Region 1 specific. Mm-hmm. That is kind of a new change this year. And then the Open Cup, or excuse me, I got it backwards. So the Amateur Cup is national, and now there's the Open Cup, which people will mistake for being as a qualifier for the actual U.S. Open Cup.
The Lamar Hunt one, yeah. This one isn't affiliated with right. The Lamar Hunt one that the Rhinos won.
Yeah, it's kind of confusing. They call it the Open Cup, and there's some confusion there. But this one, the Open Cup, is just Region 1. Mm-hmm. And our team that won the Teal Cup last year, FC Yemen, they also won the championship championship for redundancy sake. Mm-hmm. They are going to be the Western New York qualifier in that they didn't have to play a team from RDSL. No RDSL team applied. So they go straight into the quarterfinals, and they drew a home game, which we are thrilled about, but maybe against one of the best teams in the tournament, with a team from Maryland coming up to play us in Christos FC.
Yeah, Maryland's definitely a soccer power when it comes to clubs. Interesting anecdote. I ran into Taha, who's the coach of FC Yemen, and his team training at Kuhn Stadium at UB North campus on Saturday.
Oh,
so
nice.
They appear to be taking this this pretty seriously, and I think they're trying to piece together their roster in advance. So they'd be playing April 10th, is that correct?
That's right. I've worked a lot with Taha and Rocky, the manager of BSC Raiders, on their prep for this. And I'll tell you, both teams have taken it very seriously. The rules are a little bit different than BDSL. You can only carry 18. There's no subs, or there's no reentry after subs. So your starting 11 is really going to be important. And both teams really want to represent the league well, which I'm really thrilled to see the commitment from them in this tournament.
Well, you couldn't really ask for too much of a better draw, you know, both for both the Open Cup and the Amateur Cup. You know,
No, not at all. I mean, this being our first year in the tournament, we were told, like, most likely to expect a away game because I guess that's just what they do. New teams get away dates. But this tells me either, one, there's a lot of new teams or leagues participating. So that kind of played, in our favor. But the second thing was about the home draws. We don't have to spend a lot of money. I know that sounds terrible, but we're not a league that makes a lot of money. We don't really make anything. So to be able to test ourselves in these tournaments and to not have to send players away on travel and overnights, that's really going to help us. I mean, if we do great, then fantastic. We'll know that this is something we can continue year after year to do, which, I mean, I would say there will be teams willing to do it after this, no matter what happens, really. But, you know, if we get beat up pretty badly, then we know kind of where we stand. So getting the home dates was beneficial not only for, you know, maybe drawing a better crowd, but just for the sake of this being our first year, we don't have to commit too much to kind of test the waters.
You know, I think we'll see a pretty sizable crowd headed down to Elma's Salem Sports Park on Sunday to check out this Raiders against the Italian-Americans match. Will the game be played definitely indoor, or is there a chance that it'll be played outdoor, or what's the situation?
No, we got to give a big thanks to Andy Evenhouse and several of the BDSL teams who participate in the Salem's 11v11 league, because all those teams really worked with us to maneuver game times around so we can get this game off inside to avoid any weather issues. I know last I checked it was like set to be like 50, maybe a 20% chance of rain, but, you know, this is Buffalo. Weather will change on a dime on you. So we thought the safest route was to secure an indoor facility, and Salem's is one of the best in the area. So we're thrilled to be there So big shout out to those guys. And I also want to say thanks to Blizz TV, who also offered to record the game for us, because they'll be there that Sunday as well. So the game will be recorded and available to rewatch for any of those interested as well.
This is Michael Schieber joining us. He's the co-VP of the Buffalo District Soccer League. Michael, last question. You seem to have some ties to WBNY. Is that correct?
That is true. Yes, Ben, I do. I mean, Buff State's my alma mater, and I worked at BNY for one summer doing broadcasts for the sports teams. I did pretty much any sport they asked me to do, football, hockey, basketball. Hockey was probably my specialty, but honestly, I had a lot of fun doing basketball. So I did color or pregame or basically, like I said, anything they asked me to, I did for BNY. So I have a lot of friends from the station who I still talk to every once in a while. But yeah, definitely I am not unfamiliar. I toyed with the idea of coming in to studio today just for kicks.
I wonder how much has changed. I can't really tell you since I haven't been here beyond, you know, like 6 months. So.
Do they still have a Nintendo 64 in the lobby?
No.
Wow,
there's
that's
just
a shame.
A lot of couches and a lot of music paraphernalia.
That's sad. One of my favorite things about the station was in between downtime, you could just wander over and pop over and play someone in Mario Kart Racing or Super Smash Brothers or something. So
awesome. Well, thank you very much for your time. That's Michael Schieber, co-VP of the BDSL, who's talked to us about the match coming up between the Buffalo District Soccer League's BSC Raiders and the RDSL's Rochester Italian Americans. They play at 5 p.m. Sunday at Salem Sports Park. That's inside. So if you're a soccer fan in Western New York, it'll be a good game. Might get a little bit heated. So thanks again, Michael, for coming on.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for all you do for the area. Yep, definitely come down, check it out. It's free. And it's going to be some pretty good soccer from the area. So thanks a lot, Ben.
Yep, thank you for joining us.
Have a good one.
All right, it's pretty neat. I'm excited to check out that match myself. I think we'll have some coverage of it on BN Soccer or soccer.buffalonews.com. I'll have a preview coming probably on Wednesday-ish. You know, nothing too in-depth, but there's a lot of names, as Michael Schieber was alluding to, that, you know, will be familiar for FC Buffalo fans. Jake Reno is a player who's going to join the Raiders. Gavin Falconer played a little bit with FC Buffalo. John Netter had a game with FC Buffalo against, I believe it was GCC. St. Bonaventure head coach Kwame Aduro will be playing with the Raiders. If you've been a fan of Canisius, Regan Steele and Gavin Falconer, both recent Canisius alums. Three Walters, Chris Walter, Joe Walter, and Ryan Walter will all be on the field. And the odds of all of them collecting yellows is fairly high. John Grabowski, as Schieber said, Kendall McFadden, and Ian Mort. So when you look through this roster, there's a lot of former FC Buffalo players or guys who have soccer ties in the area. So there's even talk that Rudy Pikusinski Jr. will come back from somewhere in the East Coast to play against Rochester. So again, that's Sunday at 5 at Salins, if you want to check that out. Now to our final guest, and that is a very familiar name and a familiar voice that we'll hear here in a second, Nick Mendola. Nick, are you with us here?
I am. What's up, Ben?
Man, Derek Kramer is just killing it behind the board today.
It's our favorite guest host.
Nick, it's good to hear from you. We're here to talk about Leicester and Newcastle, is that right?
Yeah, more or less. That just entered the first of 3 minutes of stoppage time. It's been if you've watched Leicester at all this year, you know that they never make it look easy, but they're defending very well. Shinji Okazaki had a first-half bicycle kick goal, a true bicycle kick goal, not a overhead kick that, you know, was really lazy, like a true superstar kick. And they're holding on for dear life, but they've earned a couple corners, and they're just dribbling in the Newcastle end to try and keep the ball in.
So Okazaki, who's a player after my heart.
Obviously.
So did he leave both feet on this bicycle kick?
Oh yeah, I mean it was gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. And he is a great picture that we'll be posting with our recap. And it looks like 2 minutes because Newcastle's not going to force me to rewrite it. But they've looked pretty good under Rafa Benitez. But there's a great picture of him just being watched by Steven Taylor, who's terrible. And it was an honest to goodness one.
That's a really good segue into a talk about Rafa Benitez, because you know, Newcastle fired Steve McClaren, I believe it was earlier this week, correct? And Rafa Benitez.
Late last week,
okay. And Rafa Benitez filling in, the former Real Madrid manager, finds a job maybe sooner than some suspected, even to see this season out. Does Newcastle play any differently? Do they seem like they're a little bit, have more of an edge with a managerial change?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they've had the best chances of this game. I mean, Munster's really only missed one prime opportunity. They've scored on the other. Newcastle's just, you know, flubbing right now. I think they're feeling the pressure. That said, Mahrez looked like he was about to make it 2-0 as we were speaking. They've looked a little better organized in defense. It's important to point out, even for Steve McClaren, who I'm happy to see him gone because I thought he was doing a poor job. But, Newcastle lined up with Jack Colback, who was a holding mid at left back, marking Riyad Mahrez. They have Jamal Lascelles, who was in the championship last year, starting next to Steven Taylor because Fabrizio Colaccini and Chantal Mbemba are both missing with injury. And Paul Dummett's also been out. So they only have one true player that they would like to be starting in the back four playing today, and that's Daryl Yambat, who's really a fantastic right back.
That's pretty unfortunate when you're playing the league leaders. Leicester sitting at 63 points, I believe, and still with a 5-point lead over Tottenham. That's if Leicester City holds on, is this just another step towards what seems to be a likely title run, huh?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It really is. And today was another day where you watch the game and you can't believe this is a team that's going to win the championship. But they work their butts off, and there's no other way to put it. They're relentless. They have one player high pressing at all times, and it's not always just Vardy, who gets a lot of credit for that. You know, Okazaki helps with that, and the game did just go final. After his Leicester gets Crystal Palace, Southampton, and Sunderland. So it's very difficult, even with the Crystal Palace and Sunderland games being on the road, it's difficult to imagine they won't be in first place on tax day. And that's, this is just an unbelievable season. There's no other way to describe it.
How was Jamie Vardy today? Was he a threat? Has he slowed down?
I'll be honest, Leicester did not impress in attack at all, besides the bicycle kick goal, which happened on a cheaply given away free kick. But Leicester was just, you know, they did what they needed to do to win at home against the Newcastle team that was fairly desperate themselves. And Newcastle had far more of the chances. I'll be interested to see if there's how many shots on target are credited for this game. It was sloppy. It wasn't pretty, but they got the job done. Today was about, even N'Golo Kante was worked a little bit by Moussa Sissoko today. Mm-hmm. But Huth and Fuchs, Wes Morgan, they all did their jobs today. Danny Simpson, the former Magpie, did some good work. And I can tell you, I wonder how many times opponents walked away as someone who tends to back Newcastle. I wonder how many times opponents have walked away this year thinking, I can't believe they lost that game.
Mm-hmm. Are you, as a Newcastle supporter yourself, are you resigned to their relegation? Or do you believe that there's hope?
Of course not. I've been telling you this all year. I'm not trying to sound defiant. It's just that the two teams that they're fighting with are terrible also. Newcastle has both Norwich and Sunderland. Mm-hmm. They're a point behind both teams. They have Sunderland on Sunday at home in a huge rivalry. And they have Norwich the following week. They beat Norwich 6-2 earlier this year. There's a lot of talent on Newcastle. If they get any of their center backs back into the fold, I still expect them to come out. They also have a game at hand on Norwich. They had two before today, obviously. Granted, that game at hand is against Man City. But I'm not even close to resigned. I do expect, you know, they're obviously going to be in the relegation mix, and they have not played well at all. Wes Morgan should have had a PK today, or should have given away a PK with his elbow extended from his body to block a shot headed towards Schmeichel. But they almost beat Leicester. They've beaten Spurs. They've beaten Liverpool. I want to say Man United, or they drew them. So, no, I know that's a long answer, but Norwich is terrible.
Yeah.
Sunderland's a very good team, but all Newcastle have to do is win Sunday, and they're out of the drop zone.
I expected a little bit more out of Jonjo Shelvey after his transfer from Swansea to Newcastle. Has he met your expectations? Where do you stand on Shelvey since he's arrived?
I think he's been the best player on the team. and not to fly in the face of what you just said, I apologize for that. But
no, I haven't seen much of Newcastle, so I'm more asking.
I think he had assists in his first four games. He is disruptive. He's been given the captain's armband the last three games with Colaccini out. You know, I'm very impressed. You know, Jonjo Shelvey to me was kind of an afterthought at Liverpool, a player that maybe even made jokes about. I know people called him Voldemort because of the alopecia. But, you know, he went to Swansea and was sometimes on, sometimes off, fell out of the favor there. And he looks pretty revitalized here. I'm not telling you he's going to be a mainstay for the Magpies, but he's one of the players who hasn't quit. If I had to name three players I've liked since January, it's him and Jan Mott. That really might be about it, unfortunately.
That's so Newcastle, you know, still fighting with Sunderland and Norwich. So we'll see how that transpires over the season's final 9 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Nick, I know you wanted to do a little exercise, just given Adriano signing with Miami United, I believe, right?
Yeah, I think that's what they're called.
Well, so is it what player or what international player would you like to, or would theoretically be funny to have on FC Buffalo?
Well, kind of. So the question is, you know, if I was leading off the show and able to make it, because if the United States didn't have to work with the stupid spring ahead fall back, which England won't for a couple more weeks, what I would have said was, which player, which ghost of soccer past, reasonable ghost of soccer past, I'm not saying like Pele, mm-hmm. would you like to see in the NPSL? Because Adriano, there's been a lively debate. He's 34 years old, but, you know, 47 caps for Brazil. I believe he might have won the Golden Boot at the Confederations Cup. You know, if he's in form, how will he perform? So the question is, on one hand, which player, which, you know, you could say, wow, that's interesting. Who's, like, out of the picture who would make the fold for FC Buffalo? And the second question is, which would be most fitting? So maybe it's someone who's still playing and it's completely unrealistic, but, you know, who do you think would actually kind of fit the Buffalo mentality from world soccer?
So the one that I think is most easily connected to the team is Romario, the former Brazilian striker, and that's only because FC Buffalo just recently signed Romario Gusquet, right?
Yes, Romario Gusquet from LIU Brooklyn.
LIU Brooklyn, okay. And so I threw out a couple other names I was thinking about. I thought maybe Dunga, because I think you'd enjoy announcing Dunga's name over the PA system.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And also Eric Cantona, just for the sheer entertainment.
Wow, I like those answers a great deal. I may have been a little too, I don't want to say practical, because there's nothing practical about this in mind. But yeah, I was thinking that it would be pretty darn fantastic. And follow me here. I'm asking you to follow me on a bit of a journey. And it would be fitting to me to see Peter Crouch make the move, but I'm not going to go with him. We'll go for another player from that English roster, and that's Owen Hargreaves, who got a lot of garbage for having, you know, he got hurt often, but when he was fit, was a pretty good player after going from Bayern Munich to Manchester United. He's 35 years old. He's Canadian. I guess it would raise eyebrows, but it wouldn't be entirely shocking that someone convinced him to come out of retirement and play for a team. So that was the one that I thought you could hear that name and say, wow, that's weird, but at least connect with it. Is that fair, or is that completely out of left field?
No, I think that's good, because it's also the most realistic. You know, maybe Owen Hargreaves maybe he has family in, you know, Batavia or something like
right.
that. And you never know about these things. It's definitely a melting pot of a world, you know. So it's totally believable. One other guy who I have just, you know, thought about while you were talking, I was listening too, but also thinking at the same time, was Stuart Holden. You know, that'd be pretty cool to see him suit up for an NPSL club, you know, because I know it's very sad that he was forced to retire due to injuries, but I still feel like his talent level is very ably suited for the NPSL, you know, without, you know, risking too much further damage.
I mean, he could have been one of the best players in U.S. history. He was on pace to be a fixture, and Bolton just kept giving him contracts even while he was injured. And I think that's to be lauded. My more fitting one, given the way that we like to look good but maybe play a little angsty, is I would have liked to see Freddie Lumberg come to Buffalo at age 38. Maybe he's got a girlfriend in town. Or maybe, you know, he's got something. Maybe he's got a new Buffalo underwear deal he needs to sweat or some other sort of connection to the city. But age 38, like, you know, we like to look good here in Buffalo, but it's really all about working our butts off. He's undersized. Do I want to? I mean, if he's 5'10", I'd be shocked. So that was my, that was the one I thought would never, ever happen, but would kind of fit what we're about.
So Freddie Ljungberg. I don't even pronounce that very well.
I don't care. I'll leave that to him. I'll leave that to him. Peter, I think we should hire him. We should hire him for free to text us the correct pronunciations when we screw them up.
For sure. I agree. And you've made producer Derek laugh about 6 times since you've come on the show. So
DK.
DK. So that's been Nick Mendola of Pro Soccer Talk from NBC Sports. You can catch up on his coverage of the EPL action today and quite often now because he's writing quite a bit on Pro Soccer Talk. So look for Nick Mendola there. We will not have a show next week on March 21st.
That's not a great thing.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to say it so excited.
No, I know. But like, it's not a great thing for FC Buffalo, but it's Week of the Warriors for WBNY. It's very great causes where DJs are taking 12 or 24 hour shifts.
Wow.
So, oh, wow.
Yes.
Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
It's going to be, we want to support you guys in that, although I'll throw this out there. Kind of a cool week. Believe next week in the U.S. We'll be playing, maybe it's the week after that, so don't quote me on that.
All right, well, that's...
I got one question, actually, for you guys before we go. What is this official theme of for you, just in life?
Oh, man.
James Bittler says it's the official theme of finding $5 after going through the laundry.
No, this is like every single March and April for me.
I don't have the answer because I'm not getting the audio in my telephone, so I'll talk to you guys later.
All right, Nick.
All right, thanks, Nick. For Michael Schieber, PJ Gondek, and Nick Mendola, thank you to all three of those guests. I'm Ben Sugimoto, host of the FC Buffalo Show. We'll see you in 2 weeks.